take a minute to check your social battery. How's it doing? It's easy to ignore our needs and spread ourselves too thin. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/popcastpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/popcastpod.
Don't put snippets of songs on TikTok and then I listen to the full song and it's garbage. That's a catfish.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your bruh, it's John of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
I bought Avatar Blues and Lyre of Orpheus and Let Love In, but it paid me to not get some money.
First up is the album called Video Sex 84 by the band Video Sex. It's definitely some of my favorite ex-Yugoslavic synth pop that I've ever heard.
Been a while since I put y'all on to new albums, so here's some 10 out of 10 no-skip city pop albums.
What you've been listening to is a little bit of a mashup of some of my favorite music critics and thinkers on TikTok. Yes, y'all know my brain is broken, and I spend a lot of time on TikTok, and I'm always gratified when I see people who really not just care about music, really want to talk about it, really want to advocate for it, and also want to show their learning process, like as they're growing and discovering stuff. Look, I've been following a lot of folks, and so for this quasi-year-end episode, what we are going to do is we're going to talk with four of the people who, in my mind, have the best music-related TikToks out there. Also, shout out to folks like Billy with an 8, you know who you are, Dev Lemons, etc. Today, we are going to talk to four TikTok creators. We're going to talk to Eric Morris, aka Cyber X Boyfriend. We're going to talk to Margot Labat, aka Marg.mp3, Hunter White, aka Wawa Music, and rounding it out, it's Cam Sullivan Brown. It's just Cam. We're going to get into what albums they liked, what albums and songs they like from 2021. We're going to talk about music discovery on TikTok and off the algorithm, what it's like to go out and buy CDs at thrift stores. That's a thing that people are doing. And really just overall the direction of music as it's happening on and around the app and kind of what it means to advocate for stuff that may not be the kind of exact sounds that the app is pushing, and to kind of work against intention with the algorithm a little bit. So we're going to start off with Eric, then we're going to go to Margot, then Hunter, and then close out with Cam. So first, we are joined today. It's CyberX Boyfriend, a.k.a. Eric Morris, a.k.a. Laura Lisbon. Welcome to Popcast.
What's up? Thank you for having me.
If you are not familiar with what Eric is doing on TikTok, I highly suggest you get involved. Incredible takes on interior design, art, fashion, music, film, a real panoply of references going on here. And also, you got a little attention last year for the McMansion roasting, which is it's a little TikTok baity, I know, but you did it in a very clever way. So there was some real attention on that, yeah?
Yeah. And it kind of like threw me for a loop because it was like, it was the first thing that like kind of went like quote unquote viral. And it was just me kind of like messing around. And it's like weird when like something like that happens like hyper organically, because I feel like TikTok is very calculated.
So you think that the things that go viral in a TikTok context are in fact being muscled by some bigger engine, bigger than the algorithm itself?
Probably yes and no, in the sense of like there is a strict like content formula on TikTok that all viral TikToks will follow unless it's something that happened organically, a la like an old Vine style content. So somebody like falling or something like that.
Let's talk a little bit about music. Music is one of the things. First of all, you make music.
Yes.
That's part of it. But you also talk about a lot of music. Let's talk a little bit about this year. Was there a record that stuck out to you as a top album or the top album that you really engage with in 2021?
I really, really loved Charlotte Day Wilson's Alpha, probably because I've been anticipating that debut album for years, and it definitely delivered. And I liked how she like buckled down on more of like the gospel elements, which you don't really see in like contemporary R&B anymore.
What's a song we should listen to off that album right now?
Ooh, Mountains is really, really good. There's a track that has Bad, Bad, Not Good. It's just a fantastic album. Honestly, I listen to most albums front to back, so I'm so bad at like picking like individual songs off of them.
This is Mountains by Charlotte Day Wilson. As someone who covers a wide range of the arts, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what you think the kind of TikTok appetite or audience or whatever might be across those disciplines. Do you feel like they're different? Do you feel like people come to you for the interior design smack talk? Some people come for film. Do you think that's how it works, or is it a lot more chaotic than that?
I definitely think that like when people were first introduced to my content, they were introduced to like one specific thing. And I'm thankful that like all of it does kind of overlap and I can ebb and flow throughout it. But I also, the catch 22 of that is that you have to be very consistent across all those mediums. So like I haven't been able to like talk about film. And there was a point in time when I was going through like the Criterion Bergman box set, and I don't have it here with me. It's back in my like home in Texas. It's like little things like that.
Do you feel like the way that you can talk about each of these disciplines, can you talk kind of pitched at the same level, like at that level of expertise, or do you feel like you kind of have to guide people more with certain parts of it?
I mean, yes and no. I think all of my content comes from like my own intermediate understanding, and a lot of it is sincerely me learning along with the audience sometimes. But like that's the fun of it, because it's like, hey, here's some information I found, let me relay it to you. But like also some of it is a lot of my own like ruminations and like thoughts on these things.
Tell me a little bit about the kind of development of your musical taste. How much of it was developed kind of in a online echo chamber? How much of it is kind of, you know, IRL, out in real spaces? How did it all kind of come together?
Ooh, so I got into music when I was like in junior high school, and I had a friend on Xbox Live who was a little bit older than me, and he kind of introduced me to like hardcore. And like during that point in time, like emo and like Hot Topic core music was really popular, so that kind of moved me away from that. And naturally, I was just on the internet. And like during that point in time, I think like the indie scene was really taking off. So this is like sort of 2011, 2013-ish. So like, you know, Animal Collective, things like Death Grips, Neutral Milk Hotel, like all that stuff that's like part of like popular music canon today. And then it wasn't until I'd say about 2 or 3 years ago when I started to really diverge and develop what I would consider my own personal music taste, which is more like shoegaze, trip hop, stuff like that. And I know my tipping point for trip hop in particular was when I was introduced to the Silent Hill 3 soundtrack, which I know sounds really odd, but that made me dive more into the genre. And like, that's probably my favorite genre of music.
Talk to me about the Silent Hill 3 soundtrack. I'm not up on that at all.
It's amazing. It's a really, really good trip hop album because it's just different from video game music in general. But I think because it takes so much influence from industrial as well as trip hop, and it has like these like youthful rock elements because they tie back into the themes of the game. The song with a butterfly in the title, I can't remember, but I know one of them has like a breathing, like the bass breathes, like it warps in the same way like a breath would. And there's just a lot of interesting things at play. And I'm very heavy into like texture when it comes into music, especially.
Is that something in your music making as well that's sort of front of mind?
Texture is something that doesn't really get played with a lot anymore, especially moving into like digital recordings. I feel like a lot of stuff is more clean.
Stepping outside of the stuff that you're putting on TikTok and the stuff that you're advocating for and kind of like offering critique on, when you see the way that music moves through TikTok in terms of other people's consumption and what you're getting fed in the algorithm, like, what do you see, whether it's movements, whether it's a sonic approach, whether it's a philosophical approach? Like, what is it that you feel is getting shoved down your algo?
I feel like TikTok is a very interesting spot for music because I feel like we're kind of starting to see a little bit of a push against the TikTok initial movement of music, which was very chorus heavy, first 30 second short songs, things like that. And we're really starting to see like a reappreciation for like the artistic integrity of music when it comes to kind of like album ordering, longer songs, songs that flow in and out of one another and things like that. While before, I feel like it was about the singles, it was about drawing hype, it was about like trying to make it danceable in a way.
Is it something that changed in the app? Is it like the inclusion of longer videos? Because obviously the videos can be longer now. Like, what do you think is changing? Because generally speaking, it would be a change in the medium that would lead, trickle down to a change in what thrives on the medium.
I think it's really a change in the demographics. TikTok initially started as something that was like teenagers, high schoolers, and like very early college kids. But now as older people get onto the platform, more older people have joined in on these conversations. And there's definitely more of a mature influence in content curation overall in the app.
Do you see that even in the audience for what you're putting out? Do you feel the audience kind of being a little older than it was 6 months or 12 months ago?
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure.
And does that change what you do? Does that make you want to do different things?
Yes and no. I always have stuck to the same guns in the same lane. But I think in terms of what people demand, it's really nice that people gravitate towards like more rambly, like rant style content rather than just like comedic, like roast style content.
I'm interested to talk a little bit more, just to go back for a sec, about video game music. It's not something we talk really about on podcast before. Shout out my guy Justin Charity, who thinks about this a lot and is always texting me YouTube links of video game soundtracks to listen to that I have no context for. Can you tell me a little bit about what you think and start me like a beginner? Especially in the last like 10 years, what's happening in the creation of video game music? What are the kind of go-to motifs or frameworks, genre frameworks, whatever it may be? What's happening in it that's making that space so vibrant right now?
It's really interesting because like video game music is booming partially because of like the indie scene. So like take something like World of Horror, which has like very chip-based 16-bit but booming like 808 hip-hop influence in its soundtrack, yet it is a horror game. And I think seeing the divergent influences as compared to something like The Last of Us 2, which has like a very traditional serious cinematic like Hans Zimmer type of soundtrack.
Something I think about a lot in the context of the streaming ecosystem, not TikTok, but, you know, your Spotify's, Apple Music's, whatever. There was this thing happening about, call it 5 years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, when people really were doubling down on the playlist economy and streaming albums. And you started to see mainstream musicians really start to craft songs designed to keep you essentially from pressing fast forward. There was something about the texture of them. There was something about the fade outs and the fade ins, especially on albums. I remember like the first, maybe the second Post Malone album really did this. There was the Ray Schremer double album that did this. There was something about keeping your attention, but not keeping you alert. This tension between holding you there, but not kind of shaking you up too much. Is that how video game music functions? Because you have to be, I assume, if you're playing a lengthy game, you can't be like taken out of it mentally. You have to have music that keeps you in it narratively and coherently. Is that how it functions or is it something else?
Like, yes and no. And I think it's a very interesting dichotomy because it is such a unique use of music. It's almost similar to like how it would work in commercials. I think of like the SMT series, like so Persona, Catherine, things like that. and how those games use music, but they pull from non-traditional influences that you don't typically see in video games. So most video game soundtracks are very rock influenced, but take something like the Catherine soundtrack. And Catherine's a game based off one man's like inner turmoil between like cheating on his wife and like his commitment to her and all of that. And like, it's like a psychological thriller puzzle game type, but the game takes place in like a cocktail bar, and like the soundtrack is like acid jazz and like jazz fusion and things like that. And I think that contextualization is really important, because like there aren't a lot of vocal tracks in video games, but when there are vocal tracks, so like I think of like the main theme in Catherine that's like a big like hip hop acid jazz theme, or like the Metal Gear Solid games, and how those have like really big chamber pop influence, jazz pop like vocal tracks, but the rest of the score is very like somber and fitting for the game.
It sounds like I have to like video games now. I was unaware, but now I got to get into video games. That's wild. In addition to what you were talking about before with the Charlotte Day Wilson, what are some other albums this year that really kind of stuck out to you?
I really liked the Lil Sims album, Sometimes I Might Be Introvert. Introvert's a really good track. I really liked Snow Allegra's Temporary Highs. That one's really, really good.
Great singer.
I like Saw Baby's Do It for Demon. I feel like he really kind of matured a little bit more. Turnstile's Glow On, fantastic record. I really do like the dynamic energy on it. It feels like the progression of hardcore, because I feel like hardcore can be a bit isolated sonically.
Deeply dogmatic.
And like to see them challenging that, it's fantastic.
As we go out, is there one song, not necessarily off of an album, just like a standalone song that really stuck with you this year, that really just stood out to you?
Okay, so my favorite song this year is going to be Satellites by Fang.
All right, let's get into it. Eric, I appreciate you. Thanks for coming on podcast.
Thank you for having me. Save me satellites, run me through.
We are here with Margot Labatt. Margot, hello. Welcome to Popcast.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. This is awesome. Thanks again for reaching out. I'm honored to be here.
Well, I'm psyched you're here. On TikTok, Margot goes by marg.mp3. And the thing that I know, first of all, this task here today, this is going to be light work, because you're running down your top 40 albums on TikTok right now. So this is easy work for you. What Margot does on TikTok is very thoughtful, sensitive reads of a wide range of genres of albums, and really, really effective, direct to the camera, sort of a gentle enthusiast talking style that I think really draws you in. That's how I feel when I watch your videos. So I'm psyched to have some of that on Popcast today. Let's start with the easy stuff. You're counting down these top 40 albums. By the time we come out, I assume you'll be done. What's your top album of 2021?
It's been so hard. It's been super hard deciding I've listened to so much that's come out this year. But when I was nailing it down, and also like just looking at my top played songs this year, one really clearly stood out, and that was definitely True Love by Howdy. That's definitely my favorite album of this year. Also the one that probably was on the most heavy rotation in terms of 2021 releases.
Let's listen to something off that. What should we listen to?
I guess the title track, True Love. It was a single, and I mean, it's one of my favorite songs of the year.
True Love, Howdy. Tell me how you arrived at Howdy, just in your life, not necessarily this album. How did you arrive at Howdy in your life? How did it land on your transom?
I feel like my relationship with this album is largely indebted to just like my personal connection to the band, because I used to live in Austin. I live in New York now, but I lived in Austin for 5 years. And Howdy is just like such a huge band in Texas. So when I was in college, I found out about them through a friend who interviewed them like for our like college magazine. This is back when like they maybe had just released their first record. And so like all throughout college, I was going to their shows and I've seen them like no joke at least 10 times. So just hearing them throughout the different sounds of their career and like just how they've grown and evolved as a band and, you know, like leading to this point of true love, like, and how they've arrived in their new sound and like they're talking about like their relationships to the people that they love in their life and talking about things that are largely so vulnerable and just like really endearing and touching. Like, I feel like I've watched them grow right before my eyes and I feel so connected to them, like on a personal level. And I feel like true love also just arrived at a time in my life. Like I had just moved to New York, the seasons were changing. So all of that was just super formative into forming the really strong connection I have to true love. I can just go on about it. It's a beautiful album.
Well, okay. But one thing that I'm always struck by in your taste range, a lot of the stuff that I think that you focus on or trying to highlight is not stuff that you're getting anywhere else on TikTok, whether it's from other people who are talking about music or just the sort of like normal algorithmic discovery of TikTok, right? So can you tell me a little bit about the difference between generating taste in the real world and sort of navigating the taste generation on an app like TikTok? How are those different? I mean, they're evidently different, but talk me through it.
In terms of just like TikTok itself, what makes it so singular is how it's largely sound-based. So it's totally changed the definition of virality. And like an artist can quite literally just blow up overnight. I mean, you look at cases of like Pink Panther-esque, for example, which I mean, I'm totally here for. I love her music. In terms of how algorithms drive taste, I feel like TikTok has taken that to the max. But which I mean can be like super cool and like making music discovery so easy and like kind of proving like some kind of like common ground that like, you know, you play a song these days on the radio and people can easily identify it like as a quote unquote TikTok song. But in terms of like that, like that's cool and all. And like, I'm not knocking that at all. But in terms of how I compare like the virality and like algorithmic nature of TikTok to my own personal music discovery, I feel like I'm part of the music community on TikTok, but my music discovery for the majority of my life has been largely like individual and not even so much like of like from a producer or creator standpoint, but just like from a consumer. Like I grew up just reading a lot of forums online, but never really like posting or sharing, but or even just like, you know, exchanging recommendations with friends that I met in real life or online. And just like really just like talking about music in a way that isn't pushed from an algorithm. And I'm also just like, you know, I listen to a lot of online radio, which is not based on algorithm at all. That's like the best way for me to come across music that I would have never come across organically or algorithmically, or just like I Shazam a lot in public.
You did a video recently where you were talking about online radio. You're talking about NTS. You're talking about The Lot. Shout out to everybody who I know who does shows on The Lot. And it's interesting because the tension for me in TikTok is between the speed and intensity of what actually happens on TikTok as far as how sound moves through the app. There is a kind of, I hesitate to use the word democratic, but there is a almost, I'd say, a light arbitrariness sometimes to what catches fire. And I know record labels are still agonizing over how to make TikTok virality work for them.
That's an understatement.
Right. And it's, but as often as not, the thing that succeeds in TikTok has really nothing to do with a record label campaign. It could just be organic, bottom up, arbitrary, strange, unusual, and left field. But at the same time, I don't know if a fully formed, if your taste was only formed on the app, I don't know that you'd have very interesting taste when it came down. Is that safe to say?
Oh, yeah, I definitely agree. Because like, even, you know, like you think of like you are on the app and like you hear these songs that are just very left field. But, you know, as they become more popular, like they come out of like the outsider realm and get put in the mainstream. So they can be like these really crazy like tracks that are just like wouldn't ever really get played on the radio. But because of the virality of TikTok and like how many views and how many videos remain under the sound. Like these left field songs can just blow up and then like become more of a, like a commercial hit, which is really crazy. I can't think of any previous online examples where this has happened, which what makes TikTok so unique. But if your music taste is just being based off of like these TikTok songs, then people are going to have something to say about that. But yeah, it's just, I don't know, like what TikTok has done in terms of like consumers' relationships with music. And then also like from an industry standpoint, it's just really making everything into like a total like 180, if not like a 360. It's just really crazy to see. But I mean, I'm along for the ride. So
of all the people we're talking to on this episode, you're the only one who works in the business who are, you know, who has kind of has been starting to work in the industry. But again, I think this, I don't even know if it's attention, but like IRL taste generation versus viral app centric algorithmic taste generation. Do you feel like you going to shows, seeking out those albums, finding those real life communities, does that feel scarce to you amongst you and your friends? Or does it feel like everybody you know in real life does that, but it doesn't overlap at all really with what's happening on the app?
I feel like TikTok is changing it because I feel like it's really like speeding up the relationship of these IRL dynamics and conversations being heavily steered by what's happening online. Like it's really like making the digital come into like what's happening in person. And it's kind of redefining the phrase of like, if you know, you know, but like so many people like know now because these TikTok songs are just being so easily identifiable that it's really blurring the lines between like what's strictly happening in person and like what part of those conversations isn't at all being influenced by what's happening online. It's kind of forcing these two different realms of like digital and in person, like into like this one thing. And I feel like as we move forward into the future, especially when it comes to conversations about around music, it's only going to become more merged. But then again, like when you think it's going to become like this one synonymous like blob, like that's when there might be a total like subversion to our relationship with technology in terms of music, and people might just like end up making like really natural sounding stuff. But I mean, with the app, it just is crazy.
And on top of that, what I kind of wonder, sort of hand in hand with what you're describing, is are people going to become so turned off by the way that music gets almost like regulated through the app that they start moving back towards communal spaces? They start physical formats that are not easy to convert to digital, bands that don't put out records but do live shows or just like kind of create their own little in-person ecosystems. You know, you listen to Z100 here in New York, right? Like the main pop station. And like 12 months ago, it was just basically top-down radio programmers from major labels. Very obvious. And now literally 2/3 of the songs are just like, oh, right, it's just a TikTok song. It's happening so fast, and it's such an upending of how things used to be that I think there will be a pushback. And certainly, if you're thinking about people who naturally gravitate in other directions, the thing about TikTok, and I feel like this is true no matter what scene you're a part of, it always kind of feels like the thing that you're into is a secret. And then mysteriously, one day you wake up and it is emphatically not a secret anymore. And that's a challenge, I think, for people who are especially like, you know, more punk oriented or, you know, DIY oriented. It's like you may have something and TikTok completely warp it. So I think people are going to be trying to find ways to exist outside of those apps and algorithms.
I would not only be curious about, but just like I would kind of encourage that kind of subversive reaction. But it's so funny that you point that out because I feel like for a while there's been like an ongoing meme on TikTok of people being like, wow, there was this song that I used to listen to as a teenager and like cry my eyes out to. And like now it's like a famous TikTok song. Like what's going on? Like this is crazy. So yeah, the app is totally redefining songs of like, you know, like deep cuts from the past or just like songs that were like ironically popular even like a decade ago and like just totally giving it new life, both in a good and a bad way, or just like, you know, define it as you will. But yeah, what the app is doing to like songs that are more on the fringes of like what's deemed as being popular music is just, it's so unpredictable. And like, it's really hard to tell like what songs are going to be successful or just like what songs, and even like a couple months, just because of the speedy turnaround, like what's going to be the next viral sound, like whether it's a new sound or a sound from like many years ago. It's just crazy.
How did you decide, first of all, to start making these videos and also how to hone the presentation? Because I feel like you have a rhythm that feels, you know, signature. So like, how did you arrive at that?
Oh gosh. Well, I mean, I was always kind of hesitant to make TikToks. I've always entertained it. Like, I would say that first really started at this time last year. I was like, you know, people would always tell me, hey, why don't you start making TikToks? I feel like that would be a cool format for you. But I was always apprehensive to do so just because the app, I mean, honestly, if I'm being totally transparent, the app scared me just in terms of like how intense it was. But it wasn't until I made my first video for the job that I have currently that, and I posted it on my own personal account. This is on Instagram. I shared it to my Instagram stories and people were like, wow, this is your first TikTok you've ever made. This is so good. Like you should keep doing this. So I was like, you know what? I've always wanted to make TikToks and I feel like that was the push that I needed. And that kind of solidified the fact that I could do that. So, and then like in terms of my own approach, like honestly, like the app is so chaotic and I feel like there's so many people that are screaming at you in order to like get you to like not keep scrolling by like doing something immediately outrageous. And I was like, there's a lot of noise and like intense sounds and screaming going on in the app that I'm like naturally like not a very like conversationally dominant person in real life. And like, even when I first started making TikToks, this was back when I was living at my parents' house. And like, I didn't want to draw any attention to myself that I was like recording these videos. So I would usually be like in a corner of my house, like whispering, like into or in the bathroom, like whispering into the camera.
The secret history of the strain of TikTok filmed in parents' homes.
Yes.
But so as not to irritate parents.
No, literally. I'm just like, please, I don't wanna, my parents don't even know what TikTok is. Well, this is back then, of course. And I'm just like, I don't want to raise any eyebrows. I just want to like be as discreet as possible. So I would just be kind of, and you know, like I wanted it to be a continuation of how I genuinely am in real life. Like I wanted it to be kind of like consistent with how I am in person. So, and I'm like just a kind of low key, you know, sensitive person that likes to talk about music in a positive way. So that's the kind of atmosphere that I like to curate on my page. And one time I was talking to a friend, and this is kind of after I'd been making videos for a couple months and I'd been getting more views. And she told me like, I feel like people like your videos and are so drawn to them because you're kind of like this like cool, like older sister that's non-judgmental and that's like putting like younger people on to like really cool music that's like new and also just like new older stuff too. So I just want it to be conversational and accessible and informative and just like generally positive. So
safe harbor energy.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Okay. As we go out, I mean, again, a tough question, but like one favorite, a favorite, the favorite, most listened to, whatever song of 2021. I know you've posted about a couple of these already, but you know, what do you want the people to hear?
Gosh, it's so hard, but I would have to say this song called I Can't Dance by My Idea, which is a duo made up of two people, Lily Konigsberg and Nate Amos. And I just love this song so much. It was my intro to Lily and I got really into her music this year. So that is probably like definitely my favorite song of 2021.
Margo, I appreciate you. Thank you for coming. And here is I Can't Dance.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been amazing.
She said. She said. What'd you say? She said she wants to dance with me, but I'll be without her. I think it's just my mixed up mind. Ain't anything about her. I still forget when I'm upset. It doesn't take much time.
The new Starz series, Mary and George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true. But shockingly, it is. With next to nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villiers sets her handsome and charming son George on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. The show is full of wit, scandal, action. You won't be able to look away. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Stars and the Stars app.
I'm Emily Badger. I'm a reporter with the New York Times. Since the pandemic, empty office buildings have become much more common in many cities. Why can't we just turn them into housing? It's actually a really complicated question. To answer this question, you have to find a developer trying to turn an office building into apartments, ride a rickety elevator to the 30th floor of a construction site to see the interior guts of a building. Finds an expert in incandescent light bulbs who can explain to you how they fundamentally change office buildings. And that's just the beginning of what you have to do. When you subscribe to the New York Times, you are sending reporters like me out into the world to ask questions of dozens of different experts, to go and visit places most people don't get to go, to try to come back with answers, and then turn all of that into something that anyone can understand. If you'd like to become a subscriber, head to nytimes.com/subscribe. You need to see the animated floor plans in this piece.
We are here with Hunter White, aka Wawa Music. Hunter, what's really good, man?
I started to getting ready to wrap up the year here, thinking about all the music of this year.
Exactly. First of all, I was looking back at some of your old videos before we get to 2021 stuff. I did just watch the video where you said it's Arcade Fire all day. You are in the right place. You are in the right podcast.
Oh, boy. I don't even remember saying that.
No. Well, you know, sometimes you just have to speak your truth. And I speak my truth. We are off Arcade Fire. Hunter, where are you based at?
Right now, based in Madison, Wisconsin.
Ayo. Okay. What's happening in Madison, Wisconsin? What's the vibe like? What's the scene?
It's pretty chill here. I just went to college here and I'm kind of a fresh graduate. I'm just kind of sticking around to work for a bit here. I love it, to be honest. It's cold. I'm from California, like born and raised. So this is like way outside of my
radical shift.
Yeah, yeah. But I feel like it's kind of an adventure to kind of be Midwest living on my own a bit after growing up and being coddled in California, you know?
And I know you also really bang with Midwest emo. So, you know, to be in the ancestral home, I'm sure is motivating.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
I know it's hard to pick just one, but for 2021, talk to me about the album that was most important to you, that you listened to the most, that you liked the most, or one of them. What should we be listening to?
For me, it's really hard to pick one, but I feel like just over the course of my year, Jubilee by Japanese Breakfast.
Hey.
That one has really kind of just, it was one of those ones that kind of snuck up on me. I feel like I listened to it on release and I was like, that was an album, you know? I was like, not too insane, but, you know, a couple tracks stuck with me. And then I was like, oh, I'll send this to my girlfriend. It's pretty catchy. And then, you know, just kind of kept playing in the background. And then I was like, wait, that just soundtracked my entire summer. And then I kept listening to it more and more. And I was like, oh, whoa, this is the best thing I've heard all year. Dang, like, I didn't even realize.
What should we listen to off of that album?
I would go Savage Good Boy.
All right. Here's Japanese Breakfast, Savage Good Boy. So Hunter, something that you do that I find fascinating is you buy CDs, which I know may not be remarkable to you, but, you know, as someone with a storage unit full of 15,000 to 20,000 CDs that I don't ever touch or look at, I find both encouraging and also a little bit curious. Can you talk to me about physical media and what draws you to it?
I feel like I've always been really big on like collecting things. And I feel like with my music obsession and kind of as I've become more of a music nerd, my default was kind of, oh, I got to collect vinyl because that's like the big thing right now is everyone's kind of peddling vinyl. And I have a pretty good vinyl collection. But what I noticed was it's like anything you find for vinyl, if you find something cool, it's going to be like $150 or like beat to basically. So I feel like part of the whole fun of like collecting things, especially for me, because I primarily look for used stuff, but to be able to go to like just a random record store in the Midwest and be able to grab like Kate Bush Hounds of Love for $2 on CD, I feel like that's like exciting to me, I guess.
When it comes to collecting, are you looking to do completist type collecting, or is it really just the kind of happenstance of I show up at the Goodwill, who knows what's going to be here? Anything could be here. You're not trying to like fill in a gap necessarily.
I have a couple gaps with maybe just like some of my all-time favorite artists where I'm like, I'd love to have everything by them. But I definitely operate more of I just want to show up and see what I can find. I feel like I have a lot of albums in my head that maybe I'm not super familiar with, but I know are like highly acclaimed. And if I see it, I'm like, oh, perfect excuse to buy it, take it home, listen to it. And then I'm listening to CDs, I'm supporting artists, stuff like that.
When you're listening, do you listen to CDs through a different format than you would listen to something on streaming? Like, do you have a standalone CD player that's connected to speakers, not connected to your computer? Or do you kind of like pretty fluidly go back and forth between stuff on streaming and stuff in physical?
Yeah, I go pretty fluidly back and forth. I bought like this little Sony CD player thing just to play my CDs on. But I try to stay really in tune with new releases, and that's all on streaming. Usually what I do is if I listen to something new that came out and I love it enough, then I just run down to the record store and buy it new just because I'm like, might as well listen to it, have it in my collection. It kind of feels good. And I'm supporting the artist, supporting the art, stuff like that.
In terms of how you developed your taste, did you develop your taste completely online, or was part of it actually going out in stores, looking at covers of records and being like, huh, I bet that's interesting, let me go there? Or was that something more of like a second tier after you kind of like establish what your taste is online?
Definitely the second tier. I feel like I first kind of got my interest peaked in like how deep the music rabbit hole could go online, I guess. Because my parents, they listen to music, but not like a lot of variety, I guess. So when I was online, I was like finding all this cult classic stuff and all these different genres I've never heard of. So I was like, I just got to listen to everything first. So all the things that people like acclaim and that have kind of that cult status on the internet, that was like my home for my first basic year of like getting into stuff online. But then after that, I started getting into more collecting and like owning physical stuff. Then I started going, oh, I can find my own stuff too. I don't have to just, you know, follow the stuff that everyone else is talking about online.
In the context of what you're doing on TikTok, a lot of the stuff that you're talking about on TikTok is really not stuff that a lot of other people are talking about. It's, you know, it seems particular to you. It's sort of like an authentic, idiosyncratic taste profile. You're not too pressed about what other people on the app are doing.
I feel like that's kind of become like a bit of almost a hurdle in some senses, but also like, I don't know. A lot of times I think about like, oh, I should post like a TikTok reviewing this new super popular album because people will probably respond to it and I'll get like followers because, oh, someone has an opinion on this album. But most of the time I just can't be bothered because I just don't care about it enough or something like that. So,
yeah, I mean, that would feel like work. And that's not the point. The point of this is not to make it feel like work, I guess.
Exactly. I view my stuff, all the stuff I do on social media with music, is purely for me. I feel like it's kind of just the journaling of what I'm loving, what I'm listening to. And if other people think it's cool, then that's awesome.
Talk to me a little bit about some of your rabbit holes. Like I mentioned before, Midwest emo. Talk to me a little bit about that. I know you're into Aesop Rock recently. Shout out Ian. Talk to me about getting into that stuff and how you kind of unearthed it and brought it into your life.
Usually it's like I listen to one thing that people really acclaim or that people love talking about, and I'm like, oh, okay, like I haven't really dabbled in this kind of area yet. Let me check this out. And then it'll just be one thing I listen to and I'll be just obsessed with it. And then I'll be like, okay, I need to like listen to everything. And then I kind of just, you know, I'm looking on YouTube interviews of these people, seeing if they talk about something that I haven't heard of. My big one, I guess, I like Tom Waits. I don't know if you've seen any of the stuff I post, but I'm just obsessed. He's like pretty much my all-time at the moment. But I've been going through just rabbit hole after rabbit hole with him. There's a ton of stuff to uncover.
What's your favorite Waits album?
Bone Machine. I think it's the best.
Is there any urgency in you in focusing your attention on the full wave of new content? Because there's so much music being put out every week now. Like, if you compare it to my generation, you can reliably listen to every important rap record that came out because there were only like five in a given week. Now you might have 30 important indie rock records that come out in a week or 50 in a month or something. How much do you feel, whether it's obliged or concerned with, keeping up with that just like screaming pile of stuff?
That's kind of a passion project, I'd say, is trying to keep up with new music as much as I can. I feel like I look usually like those kind of rating websites where people put their own little scores on albums and stuff like that. I usually see what the buzz is for every week. And if whatever ones are kind of getting the most talk, I try to listen to all of them. And I do on my Instagram, I do a little roundup at the end of every month where I take like maybe 15 albums of that month that I thought were like the best kind of, or like the most essential, as I say. And I just kind of write little blurbs about them and give them little scores. But I mean, in order to do that, I have to be keeping at least one ear to the new releases.
What percent of your time do you feel like you're listening to old stuff, and what percent are you listening to new stuff?
I'd say probably maybe like 40% I'm listening to new stuff, and 60% I'm listening to not necessarily old stuff, but just like whatever I want.
Sure. That makes sense. Okay. You recently were posting, you know, just kind of like a catch-all of some other albums. Drop a few gems of other albums that were not your number one, of things that really stuck out to you this year.
LP by JPEG Mafia. I thought that one was pretty much like the number one rival for my number one. By the Time I Get to Phoenix, Injury Reserve, Tyrone Slow Tie, Glow On, Turnstile, Garbology, A$AP Rock.
You're a drainer a little bit, light drainer energy, maybe?
I'll go heavy drainer.
Heavy drainer energy. All right. Love to have a little heavy drainer energy on Bobcast.
Yeah, no, I was just about to say another one that stuck out to me was Foreign Exchange by RX Poppy and Good. That was a big one for me, yeah.
Forget how you use TikTok as a creator. In terms of watching TikTok, are you learning about music off TikTok, or do you feel like the type of stuff that really generates attention on TikTok is kind of living in a different ecosystem from where you are personally?
I feel like you can learn about music on TikTok if you kind of seek it out. Yeah, I feel like just because of the way that, you know, the whole algorithm works and stuff, you can kind of get yourself into whatever rabbit hole you want if you kind of like, I don't know, like look up some hashtags and just like a bunch of videos. For example, like I'm not the biggest pop punk guy in the world, but somehow I like liked a couple TikToks and I just get like, I'm on pop punk talk. I don't know why. But I almost feel like it's not that I hate being on pop punk TikTok. I feel like I'm almost like every time I see one, I'm like, I gotta like it because I don't really want to leave. You know, I feel like
it's like sometimes it's nice to be a tourist in those spaces, right?
Yeah.
Like sometimes when I go to the magazine stand, like I'll buy like a random, like, I don't know, like a car racing magazine or kind of like a home design, because I'm just like, what's going on here? Like, kind of want to know. Don't want to live there. Don't want to subscribe. But like just kind of want to know, like want to have the reference points.
There's some stuff in the genre that kind of piques me, but overall, I'm not that into it. But I get to, you know, live through, see what everyone else is obsessed with. And hey, if I hear a 15-second snippet of something that sounds intriguing, then I can look up the song, take a little screenshot, you know, I'm right there.
Given that you spend a lot of time focused on yesteryear, I wonder, do you spend a lot of time thinking about, okay, in a year from now, this is going to be revived, like this style, this subculture, this scene? Do you kind of have in your mind, a direction of where you think things are going, whether in indie rock or hip hop or wherever, or just kind of in any of the things that you're paying attention to?
Yeah, I feel like a couple of the big ones, I mean, I feel like the obvious ones are kind of like the kind of TikTok stuff that's been blowing up. I'd say, you know, the new Playboi Carti record and all the sons that it's kind of spawned. I'd say right when I listened to the new Pink Panthers album, one of my first thoughts was how that kind of demo feel to it. I kind of had that sort of demo feel, and I feel like I could definitely see that being something that's kind of like the new bedroom pop, you know, where it's just like super cut, simple, fast, quick, in and out. Like you got your chorus, you got your hooks, you're done.
The thing that really struck me about that album and just the songs you know, even just experiencing them on TikTok, is they really sounded to me like if you were recording someone singing along to the radio, to like their favorite song on the radio, and then you recorded that experience, which is to say the vocal is up front, the kind of what they're singing to is like a little bit fuzzed in the back, like it's a little bit distant, and that's your recording. That's what these songs sound like. They sound like the experience of singing along to another song. And I think TikTok is actually the perfect place for music like that to experience, because TikTok is fundamentally a kind of like meta musical experience. So why wouldn't a song that sounds like a meta musical experience exist in that way? Before we go, give us a song, like not on one of those albums, but like a standalone song from 2021 that really, really stuck with you, and we'll go out on it.
I looked at my streaming stats and I've listened to one song more than any other song, and that's 12 Stout Street by RX Poppy and Good.
Damn. First RX Poppy song on podcast. No nephew, no Poppy, but okay, we're going to go in. Hunter, I appreciate you. Let's go out with some RX Poppy.
Real RX. I used to wake up in my room in the morning, put on my dirty shoes in the morning. Heard mama crying last night, think the lights finna go out. Only thing my mind is heading to LA, but prison for doing some. Say I'ma go to prison for doing some. Only thing on my mind is booming the 12 Star Street, I hated that out. I had to learn early on being a man about. My mama ain't never about.
With us now, checking in, it's Cam Sullivan Brown, aka It's Just Cam on TikTok. Cam, what's really good, man? How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Phenomenal. I'm very excited to have you here. If you don't follow Cam on TikTok, highly recommended. Tremendous breadth of knowledge about R&B. Also, a lot of just like, dare I say, motivational content. Dare I say, like, uplifting. Just a lot of staring into the camera and really like putting people on positivity game. That's part of it too. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I would definitely say that's a part of like what I do on TikTok and stuff.
And also, you play football at Penn State. Like, can we talk about that for a second? You also, that's part of the game too,
yeah? Yeah, I play wide receiver at Penn State right now. So that's like, that's what I handle both sides of it.
Are you responsible for the aux cord in the locker room?
100%.
All right. 100%. I'm glad to know that. I'm glad to know that the vibes are curated very carefully in the
right,
locker room.
Right.
Let's start off talking about this year. Is there an album from 2021 that really like jumped out at you, really spoke to you this year?
It's hard to just pick one album though, because I mean, there's been so much good music, but I would have to say maybe Bittersweet by Amaria. Have you heard that before?
I haven't. Put us on.
Great, great album. Dreamy R&B is what I call it. Elite album. No skips. No skips.
Tell us a track we should listen to right now.
If you want to get the best out of the album, probably go Friend Zone.
All right. So let's listen to a little bit of Friend Zone. Now, Cam, I will say, like, sometimes over on the music critic side, over in this world, there's a lot of agonizing about the state of R&B. Now, I happen to think R&B is in a great position right now, but there's a lot of agonizing over it, right? And so people get really excited when the Jasmine Sullivan record comes, when the Summer Walker record comes, when SZA eventually comes, like, people get pumped. What have you been seeing in the last few years in R&B? Do you feel like it's a genre that's struggling at all, or do you feel like it's just very, very thorough and people are not catching what's really happening?
I feel like it's thorough, but it's changing, just like every type of music is, every type of genre is. I think like there's alternative R&B now. There's just different lanes that R&B can go into, and I don't think some people are comfortable with it, but I like the way that it's flowing right now. I think it's sturdy. I think it's a really good genre of music, and it's probably the genre that I love the most. So I think it's good.
Do you think it's different when you kind of take R&B out of the club context and put it more in the internet context? Do you think it kind of changes what the sound of it is?
I would say so, yeah.
What's the evolution in your mind? What are you hearing more of?
It's more just genre bending now. R&B, like before, is you know an R&B track when you hear it. Now I think it's a mix. It could be like an indie R&B, or it could be R&B with like a little bit of rock in it.
And who are the people who you think were like most responsible for pushing in that direction, or who kind of do it the best right now?
I would say people like Steve Lacy. That's like that indie R&B vibe. Like, I mean, with the internet as well. And Hiatus Coyote too, and Moonchild, those type of groups just kind of push the envelope a little bit. And then also with like the rise of like Solection and stuff like that, I think that's been a big influence on R&B.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I remember, like, especially you talk about Steve Lacy and the internet kind of like coming out of kind of the, maybe the second wave of Odd Future releases in like the mid-2010s. And people really weren't expecting that coming out of Odd Future. But the thing about Odd Future, especially Tyler's like a deeply musical person, like a deeply steeped in the history of whether it's R&B or pop or hip hop. And so when you really think of like him surrounding himself with, in essence, like pure musicianship, that's not surprising, even though I think it shocked a lot of people, you know, 5 years ago or whatever. But now it seems pretty obvious. What do you make of the most recent Tyler record, the one from this year?
I've been a Tyler fan for a long time, and he's been talking about making a rap album, so I knew what was coming. So I wasn't really surprised when it was like a strict rap album with DJ Drama, but I loved it. I mean, obviously, the production is top-notch, and he came with some bars. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing. Tyler's always had bars. He just like, it's not really what you think about when you first think of Tyler, but he always had them. I mean, even if you go back to like the 2011, 2012 stuff, like they were always there. It's just not, you know, the image always kind of like stepped out in front, but the bars were always there.
Exactly.
Talk to me about what gets people pumped in the locker room when you're in charge of the playlist. How do you get everybody amped for the games?
Oh, it's definitely a bunch of rap and hip hop for sure. But then, you know, I gotta keep it diverse. I could throw some country in there.
Oh, word?
For the guys. Yeah, of course. You know, you got to be diverse. I mean, there's a bunch of different races and people in there. So, you know what I'm saying? People have different music tastes. So, but it's a lot of rap. You know, you got to be pumped. You got to be pumped to go out there and practice and hit people for a living, for real.
So what are you playing? You playing like some Moneybagg Yo, some ESTG? Like, what are you really, what is everybody responding to?
Most recently, it's been a lot of Detroit. You know, the Detroit pop right now. So, you know, Rio and all of them.
Phenomenal. No, that's great. And what country are you playing?
I don't know if I can put you on some country, but you know, I'm throwing in some whiskey glasses, some Tennessee whiskey, something like that. You know what I'm saying? Keep them on their toes.
Oh my God! All right. Well, you know, I'm sure the big burly white boys, I'm sure they get it. I'm sure they're excited for that.
Right.
Talk to me a little bit about when you started putting stuff on TikTok. Like, why did you choose to start making TikToks? The rhythms of the videos are pretty established. You know, they're very consistent from video to video. When did you start making them? And then how did you land on that rhythm?
Well, first when I started making TikToks, it was more like inspirational, like you talked about before. And then I kind of made like a one-off video just about albums that I would wish I can go back and listen to for the first time. And then it started gaining some traction. So I've always loved music, and that's always been a part of who I am. So then I just started to kind of make TikToks about it, and people started loving the energy that I brought to it, because that's just who I am. I love music. I love finding new music, new artists. So I kind of just wanted to hone in on that. And then I guess like the style of video just kind of crafted itself as time went on.
Something you do that really no other music TikTokers, or at least no one that I follow, does. You sing.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that, because it's like you're not singing, and you don't mind me saying it, you're not out here belting like super duper crazy belting, but you're singing like a fan sings along to a record.
100%.
And like in a very unselfconscious way. And I feel like a lot of the times when I'm following people who talk about music, they're not living it. You know, they're not embodying it. You have a different perspective. Tell me about that.
I think it just stems from my love of music. Like when you hear that song, you have to sing. Like I call it shower music. Like you have to sing it at the maximum volume. So
yes,
like,
yes, yes.
Pedro had to jump in on that. That's how real it
that's
was.
Right. That's right. That's
right. When I'm posting these videos, like it's not like fake. I'm actually passionate about the music that I'm posting. So like I have to express that. And that's where kind of where the singing comes from. It's just like a gut reaction.
But to me, as someone that's watching the videos, it really is the thing that like lands it. Because it's one thing when you're pointing out and be like, go listen to this Ravina song, whatever. Like, that's fine. And like, I'll hear whatever 5 seconds you play and that's okay. But it may not get me fully into it. But when you watching you really lose yourself in the song, like, and you're lost in it, that to me, that's peak content. That's what it should be.
I want people to enjoy it as much as I do. That's why I do it.
No, that's super real. I mean, that very much comes across. And I assume, are you the kind of person who like puts on everybody in your friend crew? Like, everybody comes to you for what they should be listening to?
Yeah, 100%. Like, every Friday, someone drops a new album and they ask me what's new. So I have to come correct.
Right. It's like, it's a job.
Right.
Tell me, what is your discovery process? Because in some of the other segments on this episode, talking to other folks, I have folks that really love listening to old stuff. You know, they'll actually go and buy CDs at thrift stores and try to like catch up on things that maybe are not really being pushed in the algorithm. You're listening to a lot of new stuff, but not stuff that's like really in the center. You know, you're out here finding things. What's your kind of discovery pathway for new stuff?
Some of the times it's through features. Other time it's through people actually like DM me their stuff now. So I definitely take time to listen to like all their DMs and new stuff. And you find some gems in there because people are talented and I just want to put people on. So that's part of my discovery process. But most of the time it's through features. And then I look through like the credits of like an album that I like a lot. And I'll look through that producer's work, or I'll look through someone that's featured on there, or I'll look through something like that. And then YouTube also.
Yeah. And this is like, I'm glad you brought up credits. Let this be a lesson. If you are a young musician listening to podcast, put the full credits out, whether it's via Spotify or the information on the YouTube post somewhere, because that's going to be the thing that puts the next person on. Like, the toughest thing for me as someone who's been writing about music for a really long time, you know, you could just open up the CD booklet or the vinyl package and there'd be the credits. And now I'm just like, where?
Yeah.
So, you know, Cam's out here looking through your credits, folks. Like, please put them on the internet. Before we go out, like, tell me a little bit about what do you think next year is going to bring, the next 2-3 years, especially for the stuff you're paying close attention to. Where do you think the direction of R&B or just like in like the indie approach to R&B, where do you see that going in the next couple of years?
Like I said, I think it's going to be more genre bending. Like I think it's going to be a lot more indie R&B. I think people are starting to, like I said about Solection, I think people are getting into that more, like that dance R&B a lot more. I think that's where it's going right now. True R&B, there's not a lot of artists really doing that. So I think the people that are doing that are going to be like the Brent Faiyazes and the Jasmine Sullivans that you talked about. I think those people are going to be popular. But the underrated artists that are making the new music and that are going to come up in the next few years that I'm talking about right now, I think that's what it's going to be. That indie R&B, that dance R&B, I think that's going to be the next wave. That's what I'm looking at right now.
I feel you. All right, so what's a song from this year in that wave that we should go out with?
I'll give you two. Love a Rock by Elu J, and then Never Ask by Shayhan. Those two are some genre-bending R&B that I think people are going to start loving soon.
Phenomenal. All right. Cam, I appreciate you. Thanks for taking a break from practice to come and chat with us.
I appreciate you having me on.
That is our show. Thank you to Eric, to Margot, to Hunter, to Cam. Go follow them on TikTok, IG, Twitter, etc. It'll improve your life, I promise. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us, podcast@nytimes.com. Get in the Facebook group. Get in the Discord. Hell, get on TikTok. Y'all can make TikToks too. I can make TikToks too. Maybe let's make TikToks. Anyway, something to think about. Subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get your audio content, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, etc. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We will be back next week. Let's go out with one of Cam's selections. This is Love a Rock by Elu J.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.